Hi, welcome to a London Miscellany podcast. My name's Steve. What I hope to do is to bring you some stories about the nation's capital that possibly you haven't heard before. For the last 10 years, I've been hosting guided tours around the city as I'm fascinated by London's history, streets, buildings, and most importantly, the people who once called the city home. While researching these tours, I always collect more information than I need. Sometimes because the story doesn't fit in with the theme of the tour, or possibly there's not enough time to tell it. I feel these are too good to waste, and for the last couple of years I've been posting them on a blog, but more of that later, as I'm itching to get on with the next story. So come with me back to a London that on the surface looks very different. But with human nature being what it is, look a little closer and you'll find nothing really changes. Smash the pagan idol. It's a chilly November evening in 1547, and you're making your way on foot back to your lodgings after spending an evening at the Pewter Pot Tavern on Aldgate Street. As you exit the hostelry, you can hear a mob baying, whipped up into a frenzy of anti-Catholic fervour by the ringleaders. The crowd, some 300 strong, fill narrow Lime Street to bursting point, their cries echoing around the areas of Leadenhall Market. Some carry flaming torches, which throw an eerie glow on the assembled throng, casting deep shadows that heighten the sense of malevolence amongst the crowd. Oaths and curses emanate from the mob, and tension reaches boiling point, as with a mighty cheer, a handful of young apprentices detach themselves from the mob to race down the cobbled lane in search of their quarry. Doors are kicked open and resistance is dealt with by fists and cudgels, but soon the object of all this fury and anger is found. Roughly removing it from its resting place, the apprentices triumphantly carry it aloft, and a mighty roar goes up from the expectant crowd as they catch sight of the hated object. It's a maypole. To make sense of these goings-on, we have to travel back to the 1300s. Opposite Lime Street, or Lime Streeter as it was known then, sits a church with a rather strange name. It's the Church of St Andrew's Undershaft, at the junction of Cornhill and Aldgate Street. You may not know the area, but you'll probably have seen two of its most iconic buildings, the Lloyd's Building and the Gherkin, both which tower over the diminutive church. The church had been founded around 1147, but by the 1300s had fallen into disrepair, and subsequently it had been demolished and rebuilt. It appears that around this time a spring festival began, and probably around May Day, revellers would celebrate the end of winter with singing, dancing and a little drinking, strictly controlled by the local clergy. The high point of the festival was the erection of an enormous maypole just outside the church, which is said to have been as tall as the church spire. The festival and the maypole dancing remained popular for the next 200 years, right up until 1517, till May of that year to be exact, when what was to become known as Evil May Day. The celebration started peacefully enough. However, a wave of xenophobic fervour had been rife in the city during the days leading up to May Day. As the crowds began to imbibe possibly more than was good for them, some within their ranks turned their attention to the number of foreigners, known at the time as strangers, living in the city. The apprentices, an unruly bunch of young men at the best of times, fueled by testosterone and drink in equal measure, were always looking for an excuse to kick off. And as the day progressed, they focused their rage on anyone who stood out as being a stranger. They attacked foreign residents ranging from Flemish cobblers to French royal courtiers. Some of the rioters were later hung, although Henry VIII later granted a pardon for the remainder following public pleading from his wife Catherine of Aragon. This wave of xenophobia had been whipped up by a shadowy figure who preached at St Paul's Cross, an open-air pulpit in the grounds of old St Paul's Cathedral. His name was Dr Bell. Bell accused immigrants of stealing jobs from the English workers and of eating bread from poor fatherless children. Chroniclers of the time estimated that apprentices numbered around 1,000 strong, and they'd been carousing the local taverns at the top end of Cheapside by St Paul's. Systematically, they worked their way along the busy Market Street, beating up anyone who they didn't like the look of and breaking into the foreigners' houses to loot whatever they could carry. Having travelled the length of Cheapside, the mob moved into Cornhill, and later in the day arrived at St Andrew's, where the maypole stood bedecked with ribbons and garlands. It's unclear why the young men took exception to the celebrations. What could be more English than a maypole? However, reports say that they disrupted the festivities to such an extent, scuffling within themselves and diverse parties abroad at the time, and entering into lewd discourse with the maidens gathered around, that the celebrations had to be curtailed. The maypole was taken down and stored in St Andrew's Church. By this time, the Duke of Norfolk, with a private army numbering around 1,500 men, had entered the city in order to support the authorities who were struggling to keep control. By around 3 that afternoon, the riot had died down, and 300 people under arrest were released. However, 13 of the rioters were convicted for treason and executed on the 4th of May. Following the riots, the maypole celebrations were never held again, and the now redundant sections of the pole were displayed on the wall within St Andrew's. And there it sat for another 40 years, until the night described at the beginning of this piece. The 1540s were a rather turbulent time in England, with riots and rebellions springing up with regularity. The civil disobedience in question seemed to have ridden on the back of a protest arising from an act passed in early 1547, the Vagrancy Act. On the 28th of January 1547, Henry VIII died, leaving his 9-year-old son Edward to ascend the throne. Due to his age, all the power was held by his protector, the Duke of Somerset, the boy's uncle, Edward Seymour. The country's finances were stretched to the limit due to recent military campaigns, and so in an effort to raise funds, Seymour and the Privy Council pushed through a number of unpopular taxes. A wave of unrest quickly spread through the city, and fearing a full-scale rebellion, the council took measures to take the idle, unemployed and vagrants off the street, citing them as the hotbed of unrest within the city. The Act stated that any able-bodied person who was out of work for more than 3 days should be rounded up, their hands branded with a V, and then sold into slavery for 2 years. As you can imagine, this didn't go down too well with the masses, and contrary to what the council hoped, full-scale rioting broke out. As a backdrop to this, one of the fears amongst some of the population was that the young king would fall under the influence of his half-sister, Mary, a staunch Catholic, and the changes made by Henry VIII's split from the Catholic Church and the formation of the Church of England would be undone with a return to Catholic teachings. Obviously seeing an opportunity to ride on the back of the unrest created by the Vagrancy Act, a small number of anti-Catholic agitators whipped up the mobs and sent them off on the task of looking for tokens or images that may have had links with the Catholic Church. At this time, there was still much of the Catholic iconography within the new Church of England, and that's how they ended up outside St Andrew's. So returning to the scene of the baying mob outside the church, the raiding party of apprentices emerged from the church carrying the sections of the maypole, and with much acclamation sport them above their heads to the assembled mob. Job done, you'd think. But what to do now? These are sturdy pieces of wood, some in the order of 6 metres long. The young men set to work on the poles with whatever they carried about their person, knives, swords, and in some cases, small hand axes. But it became clear that they were making little impression on the structure, only disfiguring its appearance. Many within their ranks would have been apprenticed to carpenters, and they would have been dispatched back to their workshops to get the necessary tools to complete the job as quickly as possible. The chronicler John Stowe, who was later buried in the church, wrote, "As a pagan idol, it was raised from the hooks whereupon it had rested for over 32 years, sawn into pieces and burnt." In 2013, a replica of the maypole was unveiled 100 yards or so from where the original one was used. The replica itself is quite tall, but apparently not as tall as the original, whose shaft was said to tower over the roof of St Andrew's, casting a shadow across its entrance. And that's how St Andrew's undershaft got its strange name, meaning St Andrew's under the shaft of the maypole.
You've been listening to a London Miscellany podcast, which was written and produced by me, Steve Matthews. You can find more stories and information about the tours that I host by visiting www.alondonmiscellany.com. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to check out other episodes. Goodbye.